Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. Chapter 6, Pin the Perfect Plot. We've set the foundation for some amazing characters, but now it's time to make sure you have an equally strong plot to go along with them. Remember, complex characters plus perfect plot plus tantalizing themes equals a good story. So let's build the perfect plot. Way back in Chapter 3, I introduced you to the three-act structure and the 9 story beats that go along with it. Just to recap, those beats are the exposition, Act 1, the inciting incident, also Act 1, the first plot point, Act 1. In the second act, we have the rising action, the midpoint, the second plot point. And then in Act 3, we have the pre-climax, the climax, and the denouement. If you were following along with your not homework up until now, you should have a one-sentence summary of each of these story beats already. Now, equipped with the tools we have from the last few chapters, let's dive into each of these beats in more detail. I'm going to explain what they are, but more importantly, also help you understand how to use these storytelling fundamentals to map out your story and make it the best it can be. You might have gone and read about some of the other story structures over on our blog. Some of these structures are just variations of the three-act structure, while others, like the hero's journey and story circle, have a lot more steps to them. If there was a story structure that you resonated with, go ahead and use that to help plot your tale. Reading this chapter is still a good idea, though, even if you go with another structure or if you hate outlining as much as some people hate cilantro loudly and viciously. The three-act structure is the foundation of most modern storytelling, and having an understanding of why these beats have stood the test of time will do nothing but make you a better writer. The Exposition, Act 1. Every story needs some sort of setup for the readers. Even if your book starts in the middle of a war, natural disaster, or in the aftermath of a bad breakup, you must establish certain things for the reader to get a feel for your story. The exposition is the first beat in the three-act structure, and it does just that. In the exposition, your job is to establish what the current normal is, also known as the ordinary world. Who is your protagonist? What do they do every day? How does the world treat them, and how do they see the world? Are there monsters, supernatural or human? What's the political system like? Use the exposition to not only establish a baseline for whatever the heck normal life is, but also make sure you let the reader know what hurdles or difficulties characters face in this normal life. Most importantly, we should understand what your protagonist longs for. Maybe they want to see what life is like beyond the city walls, or just have a partner they can watch Netflix with on weekends. This is why it was important for us to figure out our characters first. Your characters have goals, fears, and ideals that a reader will want to know about as the story unfolds. Do's and don'ts of the exposition. Here are some tips on what to include in the exposition and what to avoid. Do: spend some extra time on your first line, paragraph, and page. These could be the make-or-break moments for some readers. Don't: fill the exposition with so much information that reading it all is a slog. Establish the ordinary world, the details we need about the protagonist, and slow drip the rest of the information throughout the story. Do: make sure you understand your protagonist as best you can. If you can't share the important details about them, how will your readers understand them at all? Don't include a prologue just so you can dump even more info before the proper start of your book. Prologue should be included for a reason, and for most books, aren't usually needed. Do: introduce the larger conflict early. It doesn't have to include the protagonist's role, since they might not even know that yet. but help the reader understand what's wrong in your story. The Inciting Incident, Act 1. Now that you've established the ordinary world, it's time to shatter it. The inciting incident is one of the most important beats in the three-act structure. Without it, your hero wouldn't have a reason to leave the life they already have. Nothing would drive them to reach their goals, like every New Year's resolution we make. While the exposition and other beats can take place over multiple scenes or chapters, the inciting incident is usually a single scene. It ups the ante, adds drama and tension, and is something that your protagonist shouldn't be able to avoid. In some structures, this beat is also named the call to adventure. Whether they want it or not, your protagonist is called to a task as a result of the larger conflict in your book. Perhaps they are conscripted to the war. Maybe they learn a tsunami is going to swallow their town whole. Or maybe their friends want to take them out for a night on the town to forget the jerk who dumped them. All of these can disrupt the ordinary world your protagonist lives in. To make an effective inciting incident, consider what it is your character wants, how they are dissatisfied, and what it would realistically take to change their world. The inciting incident does not have to immediately force them into action. In fact, the scenes and chapters that follow are usually filled with worry, reluctancy, or hesitancy, but it can. Whatever works best for your story. Do's and don'ts of the inciting incident. Do include the inciting incident earlier in your book. The entirety of Act 1, Exposition, Inciting Incident, your first plot point, should only be about 25% of your book. And if you spend too long on exposition, you're going to lose readers. Don't force the protagonist into action. If it doesn't make sense, if your inciting incident is unrealistic or isn't reflective of the hero's values, you may want to get to know your protagonist a little better. Do check out other books in your genre. The inciting incident comes much earlier in thrillers than it does in fantasy or horror. Depending on your genre, some inciting incidents might not even involve the protagonist, but pull them in after the fact. In those situations, a secondary inciting incident might be needed, i.e., someone showing up at their door and asking them to save the president. Don't force the protagonist to make an immediate decision. There's a lot of depth in providing internal conflict for a character who doesn't want to leave their ordinary world. Do make the call to action make sense for the protagonist's personality, strengths, and weaknesses. If a wizard showed up at a high school to tell a 14-year-old that they have to fight a dragon, make sure the teenager loves fantasy, is interested in the knightly heritage of their great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, has accidentally done magic before, or any number of things that can tie them to that cause. Your average teenager would say no to that wizard or die if they said yes. Make sure the connection is there. The first plot point, Act 1. The first plot point shows the reader how your protagonist reacts to the inciting incident. This can include scenes where they're just trying to figure their lives out and are hesitant about responding to the inciting incident. Few people are prepared to just rush off to war, so someone conscripted might consider running away or think about how they're going to spend their last few days before shipping out. For our folks facing a tsunami, though, there might be some disbelief that everything they know is going to be destroyed, but they have to choose pretty quickly whether or not they're going to try to evacuate in time to save themselves. Our heartbroken protagonist, who is invited out for a night of fun, must decide whether they're going to continue wallowing in their apartment with Ben and Jerry's or if they're going to put themselves out there again. There is not a mandatory number of scenes or chapters that you must spend cultivating your protagonist's response to the inciting incident. It's the variation within the beats of a story that make it uniquely yours. Ultimately, your protagonist must respond in a way that progresses the story and pushes them away from their ordinary world. Without that, you wouldn't have anything else to write about. Do's and don'ts of the first plot point. Do make your protagonist's reaction believable. Unless it fits your character's personality, don't force them into a reaction. Don't take too long resolving the story beat. Yes, tension and uneasiness can help develop your main character, but don't spend too long on the first plot point. Sometimes this story beat happens within a paragraph after the inciting incident. Sometimes it takes a chapter or two. Either way, remember that it is the gatekeeper to the rising action and all the great stuff that makes your story even more awesome. Don't drag it out. Rising Action, Act 2. As you enter the second act, you encounter the rising action. This is where all the build-up and fun stuff starts to happen in your story. Or, if it's a sadder genre, the not-so-fun stuff that still enthralls your reader and builds character. The rising action takes place over numerous scenes and multiple chapters. There's a lot of room for development during this beat for both your character and world. In this rising action, you can write about your protagonist exploring their new, unfamiliar world, your antagonist's effort to stop your protagonist, new friends and acquaintances your characters meet along the way, new obstacles and enemies, new information or backstories about your characters, the larger conflict developing in your book. There is plenty of opportunity for you to explore and develop different aspects of your story during the rising action. Your protagonist, however, isn't very confident or powerful at this point. Powerful could refer to magic powers, martial arts, political power, social power, etc. They aren't necessarily seeking out the bad things that are happening. Instead, they are reacting to most things that life throws at them. And by life, I mean you, the sadistic author who is putting them through all this in the first place. That doesn't mean your characters are passive and just let things happen. Rather, they are doing their best to keep up, all while learning and growing along the way. Do's and don'ts of rising action. Do, continue to increase the stakes for your characters. It's called rising action for a reason. Things are getting more and more tense. This means that your pacing will increase and obstacles will become more difficult to overcome. Don't go long periods of time without introducing conflict or expanding on the larger conflict. Remember, stories are driven by two opposing forces. If you take a long break away from this, some readers might get turned off. In the same vein, don't make every scene a fight or conflict. Find your happy medium for your style of writing. Do ensure there are opportunities for your characters' weaknesses and flaws to be tested. This is where the most growth will come from. Don't make your protagonist invincible, which could be physical, emotional, or mental depending on your genre. They shouldn't be barreling through the obstacles in the rising action without growth or consequences. Do create obstacles that make sense. Don't throw a monster or a love triangle in just because you can't think of anything else. Everything should contribute to the larger narrative, whether that be pushing the conflict forward or developing a character. The midpoint. Act 2. The midpoint takes place somewhere near the middle of your story. For creative folks, sometimes we come up with really boring names. But it isn't just a scene in the middle of the book. Rather, the midpoint should be a turning point for your protagonist. Some big event happens here that is bad news, like really bad news, for the protagonist. This might mean that our conscripted soldier's unit is betrayed and left for dead. Maybe we learn that the tsunami is going to hit hours before originally thought, or our heartbroken hero finally gets the courage to ask their ex to get back together only to see them kissing someone else. After this devastating event, the characters must refocus their efforts on their goal. There is a renewed sense of urgency driving them forward. Do's and don'ts of the midpoint. Do make the midpoint event life-changing. This should be the most significant moment so far, but should not be a win for the protagonist. Don't get to the midpoint too early. You need time in the rising action for characters to develop and readers to get to know your world and those living within it. Do create a midpoint that is particularly devastating to your characters. Why is it so impactful for them specifically? The second plot point, Act 2. Being the ruthless author that you are, You've now put your characters through the worst scenario yet with the midpoint. They're sad, defeated, maybe even depressed. Everything they've worked through seems to have been for naught. The second plot point is usually a series of events that show how the protagonists cope with what happened in the midpoint. Everything has changed now, and it's time for the characters to transform as a result. Most often, this will be a handful of scenes leading to their renewed resolve. These scenes could include reflection, denial, improvement, like a classic training montage set to Eye of the Tiger, help from others, like a good old pep talk. So our conscripted soldier who was left for dead could crawl to a nearby house, heal up, and craft weapons to use against those who betrayed him. Our family in the path of a tsunami could panic, but come together to make a plan that saves themselves and their neighbors. After seeing their ex smooching someone else, our heartbroken protagonist could decide to focus on self-care and their creative side hustle to find meaning, probably after reading this book, let's be real. The midpoint figuratively or literally laid your protagonist flat on their back. The second plot point is how they stand back up and move forward. Do's and don'ts of the second plot point. Do shift your protagonist mindset from reactive to proactive. They are no longer just responding to what life or you throw at them. Because of the midpoint, they are actively pushing themselves. Don't drag on the protagonist's recovery or response for too long. Yes, we have to empathize and understand how devastating the midpoint was. No, things shouldn't be fixed in a scene or two. But if your characters are wallowing in self-pity for too long, then your reader will start to be annoyed. The pre-climax, Act 3. If you want to be as angsty as some of us were in the early 2000s high school, you can also refer to this beat as the dark night of the soul. In the pre-climax, you need to be mean to your protagonist. Again. See, as your protagonist was leveling up, learning more about the world, or trying to escape their awful situation, the antagonist should have been growing and getting stronger as well. Your main characters don't know this until the pre-climax, though. Armed with their motivation from the pep talk that is the second plot point, your protagonist goes head first towards their ultimate goal. Your abandoned soldier attacks those who betrayed them. Your family braves the final stretch to safety. Your now successful entrepreneur heads to a convention to sell their artisanal crafts. But the pre-climax stops them dead in their tracks. The soldier encounters overwhelming odds. The tsunami crashes down. The ex is also at the convention with their new lover. In the pre-climax, we see the antagonist's full strength and highlight the deepest fears and weaknesses of our protagonist. We have to keep rooting for our protagonist, even if all hope seems lost. Do's and don'ts of the pre-climax. Do make your protagonist the most confident they've been since the story began. It sounds cruel, but this makes the resistance they encounter seem even more hopeless. Don't make it obvious that the hero will be victorious in the end. While all readers know that almost every story ends with the protagonist succeeding, the pre-climax should make the readers think that maybe, just maybe, the antagonist will succeed. Do make the stakes high. If the antagonist does succeed, it should be absolutely devastating for the main character. The consequences of failure should be the worst that could happen in your story. Death, financial ruin, heartbreak, disappointing your parents even more than usual. The climax, Act 3. This is it, the moment we've all been waiting for. The climax is one of the beats that usually takes place over a single thrilling scene. It is the ultimate moment when your protagonist stands up once more, rising from the ashes of the hit they took in the pre-climax, and prevails over the antagonist, usually. This is the scene where our betrayed soldier gets his revenge. Our family clings to a raft for dear life as they are washed away by the tail end of the tsunami. Our successful entrepreneur closes the biggest deal of their life, showing their ex what they're really capable of. Your entire story has been leading up to this point, so give your readers what you've been promising this whole time. Do's and don'ts of the climax. do make sure that your protagonists prevail because of the growth and development they've experienced throughout the story. Make them conquer their fears and prove that they've overcome their flaws. Don't draw out your climax for too long. The pre-climax can take place over multiple scenes so your protagonists can experience the gut punch you're delivering to them, but the climax should be an explosive, tense turnaround. Do consider what prevailing means for your protagonist. Has their view of their ultimate goal changed at all throughout the story? The person who left the ordinary world in Act 1 might have been searching for something much different than the person in Act 3. The Denouement, Act 3. Take a deep breath because the worst of it is likely over. The Denouement, also known as the falling action, is a chance for you to tie up all your loose ends and plot holes. It's also an opportunity to give your reader a look at what the new ordinary world looks like now that the protagonist has accomplished their goal. This doesn't necessarily have to be a happy ending, but absolutely can be if you want it to. For our soldier who just got revenge, the denouement could show them running from the consequences of their actions or establishing a new life overseas. For our family who escaped the tsunami, it could mean rebuilding the community that was destroyed. For our entrepreneur, it could mean waking up and going to a job that they enjoy while finding fulfillment that isn't dependent on someone else. The denouement is also where you can wrap up character arcs, resolve subplots, reinforce the transformation of characters, fulfill promises you made earlier in the book, and restate or clarify the theme, which we'll talk about in the next chapter. Finally, if you're writing a series, the denouement is where you can set up a soft lead into your next book. That said, the denouement should be a break from the tension of the rest of the book, so don't do anything too intense. Do's and don'ts of the denouement. Do wrap up any subplots or unresolved character arcs. There are few things more unsatisfying than being teased with an answer and never getting it. Don't fill the denouement with action. Your reader needs a break after the intensity of the climax. Your denouement can be happy or sad, but don't make it another tense action sequence. Do focus on your characters, their journeys, and what their new ordinary world means to them. Remember, characters are what make a story important and memorable. Don't spend too long on the denouement. It's called the falling action for a reason. Nothing overly exciting is supposed to happen. If you drag on scene after scene with no conflict or development, you will bore your reader. Any cliffhanger should be brief and will leave the reader hanging. Not homework. Expand your three-act outline. Revisit wherever you wrote down the one-sentence summaries of the 9 story beats in Chapter 3. Ideally, you use story notes or the plot grid in Dabble to make it easy to expand and edit your plotting. Using what you've learned in this chapter and from developing your characters in the last chapter, expand your summary of each of the 9 beats. Don't rush this or you'll be rushing the foundation of your story. And would you buy a house if you learned someone rushed its foundation? For plotters, go crazy. Write a paragraph for each summary. Heck, if you know the beat takes place over multiple scenes, try writing a paragraph for each scene. Pantsers, at least expand your one-sentence summary into 2 or 3 sentences. It won't hurt to have a little bit more information going into your first draft, and I promise that a few sentences per beat won't restrict your creativity. Wherever you fall on the Pantser spectrum, expand your outlines as much or as little as you want. Once you've done that, it's time to move on to the third key story element, theme. That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk with authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app to never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabble. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool shouldn't be. Dabble is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial. Thanks for listening.